So it's the March 15th, 2016 edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Having equipment failure or at least problems. So bear with me. You may have to turn your volume up because it looks like I'm not getting a lot of volume from my end. But we'll do what we can. This is going to be a couple of hour show with a couple of hour flashback. At the end of it, the flashback is going to go to December 18th, 2008, probably briefly described at the end of the initial broadcast, or netcast, I should say. I'm going to kind of let the netcast speak for itself. I've begun a bit late, and I'm already beginning to flag, but I'm not going to stop until I'm finished, or if I, well, if I do stop, you'll probably hear about it, and you'll get what I've done. So, let's kick off the show as we usually do with a little familiar music.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with an interview with Kesson Jammer Keith McHenry, as I used to call him, and we'll probably call him again. He's the local activist who does the Food Not Bombs with lots of help from lots of other people, but also spends some time trying to run around and start opposition to the genocidal wars that your taxpayer dollars are funding. So here's a conversation I had with him recently, interrupted by a little music, probably from David Rovics, maybe from some other places, but just listen along and you'll know just as I will. Okay, well, I'm on the line with Keith McHenry, who's what? What are you doing, Keith McHenry?
I'm really sore today. My back was killing me, so I've been laying down all day.
Oh, bummer.
That's what I've done all day.
Well, I know you've been running around all week from one war rally, anti-war rally, to another. I guess I've been asked a couple questions which you might know the answer to, you might not. You've been busy doing stuff. MH Can, you may know, is still not operational, as far as I know. Have you heard anything new about that?
No, it's not operational, and I guess there's like sort of one effort to have these new board of directors be formally accepted by the state attorney general and that. So Alicia's kind of working on that. And then she's writing up what the different stuff is. But it's kind of have some roadblocks because you have to have like biographies of people. So now she has to contact the people that wanted to be on the board and get us short bios from them. Mm-hmm. So there's something like that. That's going on. And then I guess People First are trying to get.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah, People First. Is there any new developments on that score?
No, not that I'm aware of, no. But, so people are, you know, it might be better than nothing at People First, although they have been kind of dropping the ball on, like, a winter shelter, for example. So that was kind of concerning, but. And also, it's not clear whether it will be really, client-run like it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Hard to say. That's the danger of a nonprofit taking it over.
Have you, you've also been doing some anti-war protests against the U.S. and Israeli invasion of Iraq and the increased escalation going on there. Your demonstrations, I've been to a couple of them, as you know, but not as long as you have. You are sort of the mainstay of a lot of these protests. What I really wonder is how you manage to maintain your cheery demeanor, plus extra backache afterward in dealing with this kind of thing.
Oh, I don't know. I think it has a lot to do just with my upbringing, you know. And oddly enough, both of my grandfathers play kind of a role in that. So one grandfather being OSS and, you know, Army Intelligence, and then potentially CIA, although he didn't really broadcast that. And just learning about how the system works from him. He passed away when I was 14, and he was a matter of fact over all the years about how, you know, like, so it's nothing is really a surprise, you know. I know how the mind of these people waging these wars, at least the ones that are in the intelligence community, kind of perceive things. So it's not shocking in a certain sense because of that. And then the other thing is that my other grandfather lived with the Hopi, and I was blessed to spend time on 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Mesa and Old Araibi, and I went to the ancient snake dances as they had been done every year for thousands of years and so on. So I had this other connection to the earth, and I grew up in national parks, so I was always in the wilderness and so that really informed me as well. So mm-hmm. I have like a, so I guess that's why I don't get my all crazy about all these things. It is sad that how many people are dying, and it is sad how bad the economy is going to be and how many people are going to suffer from lack of money and food, and those things are really traumatic. But also I have like a lot of studied history. These things are, this is going to be a different one. I thought it was interesting too, because for some reason I came across an old tweet I did in 2024, advertising a event we had at London Nelson to prepare for the fallout from World War III and the war between the Israel, U.S., and Iran. And so we were already, and a lot of people came to that meeting, and I rented room 3, the big one, and here we are. So,
well, what disturbed me, Keith, was that, much as, I guess, when the war immediately, when Israel bombed the Iranians recently, it was the next day, you declared a protest, and I think very few people showed up. Well, not very few, more than showed up at the most recent protest. And the next protest, which you suggested may have been bolstered by Democratic Party regulars or people who are motivated by the organization that's been partially anti-war, but not as far as the Ukraine goes, or as far as Iran goes, or as far as the Gaza genocide goes. So I'm just wondering, what is your sense of, and maybe you have any sense, because I saw you talking rather volubly and with some enthusiasm to a woman at this last protest. Have you had much conversation with people between protests as to, do you have any sense of the temperature of the community, whether that, are people just going into hiding? Are they biding their time? Are they turning to, movies? And what are they doing? Any sense of that?
Well, it's an interesting thing, because I get a sense, because the amount of honking at everything I do, and particularly yesterday, because we had all those no war signs up and stuff. So it was very visibly anti-war. It wasn't like individual ones where you is that they're against Trump, and very little anti-war stuff. So the fact that this was so obviously just about being against the war there was that many honks to show up. And when we also have like the Food on Bombs banner over the highway at one point. And so you see that the regular people are definitely, you know, up against this war, and you know, we get very few people giving us the middle finger by comparison to the number of people that honk and wave and everything. So people are against the war, but the problem is that there's really no way to get those people, because see, the ACT Blue and our revolution email addresses, that's what can bring out all the people for Indivisible, and also their ability to buy ads on social media and so on. Whereas, you know, I don't have an ACT Blue, email list. I don't have...
What is an ACT Blue email list, Keith? Define it for us.
Okay, so how the Indivisible is an astroturf group associated with the Democratic Party. So they have access to the Democratic Party's two main email accounts, and one is ACT Blue, and the other is Our Revolution, that was Bernie Sanders' email account. And these were all collected. Like, in fact, I just saw now the ACT Blue, or kind of through Indivisible, has got a petition where we want to have Hesek fired as Secretary of War. So I went to it, and then you notice once you get there, if you say yes, then you're added to the Democratic Party's ACT Blue email list and their text list. And that's why I must have signed some ACT Blue thing long, long, long time ago, like a petition like that, maybe 10 years ago or something. And so then I end up getting text messages from Democrats. Like, I have no interest in the Democrat. And that kind of thing, you know. So it's really interesting how they do that. Well, it's a good scam. So they can bring out, that's how they put, now they're gearing up for their 28th, March 28th. Now, there is occasionally, there was one...
That's the No Kings rally coming up?
No Kings rally, yeah. And so there was one one Indivisible post on Facebook that did mention that they were opposed. There were actually been two recently where they kind of seems like they're against the war. You get a sense of that. But it's not real strong. But most of their actual publicity to come out to the, and none of it has any reference to war at all of any nature. And they had nobody speaking from the stage about war. The last No Kings rally, which was held basically 3 days after Israel attacked Iran, what became the 12-day war. And you would thought, because they were bragging about 7 million people attending their events, well, you could have really had maybe some impact if you had as one of your main themes stopping this war, which was Trump's war, right? And if you're against Trump, what would be better than to be against Trump's war? But for whatever reason, which I have my suspicions, they don't want to touch that, because it turned out because so many millions of dollars are provided to Indivisible over the year, since 2017, by the Open Society Foundation and Tides and so on, that the goals of those funders have been traditionally to overthrow governments that are a threat to U.S. corporate interests. You know, like, you know, they've dumped, according to I believe it's Victoria Nuland, a State Department official, there was over $5 billion spent to overthrow the Ukrainian government. So, and that's why you see all the Ukrainian flags at all the Indivisible events, because it's all part of the same shtick, you know. And essentially, Indivisible is the American color revolution. And I get this, and it seems pretty clear because of their publicity and how they advertise themselves and what their messages are and everything, that the, and also just reading the history and who started it and watching their little video today of the two founders talking about it, you see that it's really just to get Democrats elected, and that it also is to hold the space that would otherwise have been the anti-war space. But this way, since the people with all their resources to get the word out, get people out, they make sure that that is not the message, and therefore they've essentially killed any possibility of a anti-war movement, although I think they'll be overwhelmed anyway. I think a lot of their rank and file that somehow think it really is a grassroots movement and who have no idea who's funding it and why, will ultimately, and that's why I've been going to their events and advertising them only as anti-war events.
Because what's been the effect of that, Keith? When you were at this relatively large, I would say 200-person event at least, that was on the corner of Ocean and Water, was it last Monday or the Monday before? It was the largest such anti-war event I've seen on the corner there for some time. And it did have a lot of people who looked like they were from Indivisible. And you, at that point, you had the Food Not Bombs banner, and you were somewhat optimistic about how maybe and as you spoke a little bit just now about that Indivisible maybe coming around to recognizing that it's time to jump on the anti-war anti-Iran war wagon before it rolls over you. I mean, that's, I should say, yeah, until it blows you away.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely would seem like they're not saying on their publicity, which I'm getting a lot of on Facebook and a bit on Twitter, but mostly Facebook, maybe none on Twitter. It's sort of like it's a boomer, you know, their campaign is for boomers, and boomers aren't so much on X. But so anyway, it looks like, they're not making the war in Iran. You know, they could have saved, you know, stop Trump's war on Iran, but they don't, because the Democratic Party, as you can see from the leadership, you know, are for the war, you know. And so the reason a lot of people, Indivisible has like this Monday at 4:30 vigil, and usually it's not that many people, but then I advertised it not saying anything about Indivisible and just advertised it as an anti-war rally, and so there ended up kind of being half Indivisible, half random people who were against the war.
The USA and Israel together again, slaughtering women and children in prisons with jagged sticks, bombing refineries. The air is thick with black smoke, black rain, black country they've decided to attack, in between Afghanistan and Iraq. Bombing hospitals, killing in the name of winning at the imperial game. Bombing school systems.
That song was called Now What by David Rovix. It's actually at the end of his speech, which you can find on his podcast. Check it out, David Rovix, R-O-V-I-C-S. And now back to the lack of protest, or small protest, anti-war protest in Santa Cruz that's going on while the war widens and widens.
So it gave an impression that it was a real big crowd against the war, but a couple of the indivisible people did come out with no war signs at that action. So I do think that that's they're going to have to start saying something about the war, maybe, I don't know, in more of a major way.
The largest protest at that corner, was that last Monday or the Monday before, or was it the? Am I missing my dates here?
I can't remember. I'm like really burned out.
I
don't know which day it was either.
I mean, I just noticed though there seemed such a shrinkage. There was a large crowd. The next protest, there was a smaller crowd, and then on Friday there was, you know, seven of us. So which is
disappointing because that was a heavily advertised national.
What do you make of that? Bernie Sanders, when he came to town, they were around probably the longest line I've ever seen for an event. Of course, Sanders was a Democratic Party Judas goat, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, at that time, he had talked about running independently against then Hillary Clinton and the other Republican candidate, or the other Democratic contenders. This shrinkage of interest as the war escalates, am I unnecessarily depressed about this? Is this a natural phenomenon? is everybody about to strike back when the moment is right? What's your sense about this?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any particular pattern yet happening. I think the reason that more people came out besides my advertising on the day where there was almost 200 people, it was because also Indivisible was running this whole online thing about how the Democrats were going to introduce the War Powers Act. And part of your reason of Indivisible people going out on that day in larger numbers than normal, usually it's like a small handful of people with some Ukrainian flags sit there on that vigil. But this time, more people came out because the Indivisible is kind of pushing this ideology, and the Democratic Party itself was pushing this ideology that the Democrats are going to try to stop the war by introducing this War Powers Act thing.
And of course, they failed, for those who weren't aware. I imagine most everybody is listening to this, but any comments?
The most important thing, they knew it would fail. They set it up to fail. They wanted it to fail because they supported the war, but they wanted to also, that's why they chose four people who were not incumbents and who were like politically safe to vote to kill the bill. And that it's just like what the Democrats did for the food stamp and healthcare fight that happened earlier. This is like the normal thing where they choose some people to kill the bill, but try to give the impression they're for the bill. Because if you look at the people that introduced the Jimmy Panetta and Blumenthal from Connecticut, they're the ones that introduced legislation to go to give a blank check for war against Iran when Biden was president, right? So that Congress voted that, and you know, Biden signed it, and that was Democrats that pushed that, and that's actually what the legislature is now that allows all this war to happen. So in part, so it's just a game. I do think that the regular rank and file people, because the other thing, if you notice, there's never been any call for the end of the genocide by Indivisible. They the entire time Indivisible has been active since Trump got elected, because they're dormant when the Democratic, if you notice, they don't have any events in the 4 years of a Democratic presidency, and then they only have them when there's a Republican presidency. So it's like this, and really, well, and from their point of view, it's only Trump, and it was set up according to the two people that are the founders, that to basically because everybody would upset about Trump, and they would be able to harness that anger at Trump and have it be used to get Democrats elected. You know, that's a
electoral device. Let me have you jump back, Keith, because although it may be a sort of a dead letter or a dead horse, the MH Can group, those want to see it redone, supported, and you're one of them, I know, because you were helping to try to get together nominations for the board of directors for the revivified MH Can. They're going to be meeting again. You want to announce when that's happening, if you know?
We don't have a meeting in the future.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought there was a meeting at the in the parking lot of the MH Can, but I guess there was never such a scheduled meeting, huh?
No. Now we have to fill out all this paperwork, and then we will. And then once that the next thing happens, then we'll do that.
Now that's depressing because I don't think waiting for that is.
Well, that's only the way that we can do. Unless we break into the building, that's basically what we can do.
Obtain entry. Don't use those nasty words, please.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where that is at. Yeah. There's no. Yeah, I mean, once we look like we're having some movement either for or against, we file the paperwork, then we'll probably do more meetings.
So the Santa Cruz Homeless Union continues to meet on Wednesdays at 3:30. Is there anything new you want to announce about that?
Well, I hope more people come to that this week because a bunch of us were not feeling well that day. I had a really hard time that day too because my vehicle's been in the shop and having a bad back and walking all over town is not the best thing. And, which is kind of surprising. You would think walking would be good. But,
you're planning an event, of course, on the 29th of March? Is that right?
Yeah, the 29th of March. And then I handed out flyers at the Housing Matters event at the mall, that they had Thursday night.
And you got there. I thought you were going to be doing a thing on campus.
Yeah, well, I just went there beforehand and handed out flyers to everybody that I could, and the Housing Matters was not happy with that, but everybody was happy to get their flyer, except for the, three employees from Housing Matters, and then...
How big was the crowd there? Oh, explain what this was, perhaps, if you have any sense of it. People don't know what we're talking about.
Like four times a year, they have a kind of this PR event where they bring up they get the board. Like one board member came while I was there. He didn't want a flyer because he said he would know about it, which he wouldn't know about it, but he thought he would. And anyway, so they have like three people that had one time been homeless and then were helped by Housing Matters, and they give a little tale about how they were helped.
Now, what was their event that they're planning, and what was your event that you and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union have been planning?
Well, what we believe, and we have a little bit of confirmation about this, but we don't have total confirmation about this, but every year, we suspect that they were going to do it again in May, and we have some evidence that we're going to have a parade in May called March to End Homelessness in Santa Cruz County. And so knowing that, and I attended the very first webinar of that, and Murr explained that the budget was between
Murr is 50,000, who?
And Murr is the second, is the public relations person or some kind of thing like that. Basically, the director's right-hand person, Phil Kramer's, assistant or the person.
Phil Kramer is the head of funding matters, who we sometimes call housing matters, or they call it housing
correct.
Matters.
Yeah. So anyway, so there was about like 20 people at this event, which is for, like conversations with about homelessness, and they bring in, and they, like they say, they bring in, and they even brought Greg was speaking there. I thought that was funny.
That's this is the one at the Museum of Art and History on Thursday night.
Correct. And so then, but their next event, or big event, was this March in May, that cost them $65,000 a year to do. And so the homeless union thought, well, one, $65,000 to walk from City Hall to the parking lot at the county building, and then put up a bunch of, have the nonprofits that deal with homeless people set up little booths, you know, for why that should cost $65,000 each year. She said, Murr suggested it was less than $65,000 last year, but still probably $50,000 or something, and it might have been more. Anyway, so that, you know, when homeless people need services and they're shutting the day services down after they spent nearly $1 million on repairing the showers, which only existed for maybe 8 months.
And you're referring to the announcement made 3 or 4 months ago that Funding Matters, Housing Matters, is planning to shut down showers, electrical cutoffs,
the mail room,
mail services,
all that stuff.
And I guess I don't know, almost anything else that does not involve people in their programs, which has been used for people in the broader homeless community and historically was so used, that's excited some real anger among the staff there. But was there much staff at this MA meeting on Thursday? What was the size of the crowd? What was your sense of it?
Well, there was three staff people that were visible, staff people. And then there was three speakers, which were people who had gone through their program somehow. And then the Homeless Garden Project was there. And I gave him the flyers to hand out after I left, because I was friends with the dude that was...
But the general public had not arrived yet.
Well, yeah, the general public. So when I went into the room, there was like six people that I handed flyers to. And then there's probably another six or eight people came in after that. But they couldn't have had more... The room didn't hold, 20 people, so it wasn't like it was going to be a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe 30 people. But so that was that. And then, but so our march is, we have three demands, and we preempted their march. And so far we've spent, maybe $150 total and, cardboard to make signs, and I've been getting all the printing basically free at libraries and stuff like that, and I did do 11-17 posters, and that I was inspired to do because when Mark came out of Housing Matters, when I was doing a protest in front of it, at the corner, she was like, saying, oh wow, people are confused about whether your march or our march, don't you think that that's like a problem? And I go, no, that's not a problem. And so, it'd be great. You can join us because we got our three demands.
And she immediately offered to do so.
No, she did not.
Oh,
but we did have our three demands, and our demands being that stop the sweeps and, open the day services and audit the homeless industrial complex. So you agree with those anyway, right? So join the march. And so that I've heard otherwise, that apparently this is causing them some problems. So I figure, well, if we're touching the nerve in that manner, we should make more posters and put them all more places.
Could be.
Push this whole thing as much as possible.
I mean, you've also been making attempts to get to the sweeps that are still happening on Thursday morning. Was there a sweep on this last Thursday morning? I wasn't aware one way or the other. Do you
know? I think there was, but I was so burned out from the whole day before. I had massive headache and back pain and stuff, so I slept.
And you were you were also up at the University of California with some sort of a lecture that you were doing. But what did you get any sense of the student community being interested in either your march or the opposition to the war in Iran?
Okay, well, that was Platypus is what that was. So Platypus was started by a political science professor at the Chicago Art Institute. And he was one of the speakers, oddly enough. So it was a panel. It was him. And And Platypus is like a Marxist conversation that happens on campuses. It's sort of like the Turning Point USA of Marxism. So as you can imagine, this had 7 or 8 people there.
And let's take a brief break. Here's another song by David Rovix. He introduces it, and I'll let him do the talking.
There's a lot of great songs from throughout history that are always very relevant to revive, and that is a very, very relevant one right now, for sure.
That's musician David Rovix, and on today's show, we'll find out more about the song he's referring to. In fact, we've got a lot of music for you today. We'll hear highlights from the 2026 Labor Grammys, including the winning song. Then, we'll share medleys from a new Labor Heritage Foundation playlist of songs released in the wake of the killings of American citizens by ICE in Minneapolis. Some are angry, some are sad, all are powerful expressions of solidarity. Plus, we've got another edition of Labor History in 2. I'm Chris Garlock, and that's all coming up on the Labor Heritage Power Hour. Music, movement, and some big questions about the future of art. But first, here's Harold Phillips with this week's Labor Arts News.
Thanks, Chris. Video game workers across the globe are leveling up their fight for dignity on the job. At Ubisoft,
she made the dean's list at college graduation. Her papa had to win, switch it through the cap, ditched the gown, and slammed her boots on the ground. To July for him to come to, but he finally set out a box of his rusted old tools, even the ones he hadn't taught her to use. Shaking his head, he turned her loose. Would have saved a lot of money if he'd seen that rise of a tradesman.
stop, coming for to carry some poor fool to my job. Then like a seamless dance, where the partners glide, or the graceful flow of stream and tide, we all moved so instinctively from the deepest well.
At Starbucks, the baristas have tried to form a union, but the bosses have refused to have a negotiation. But if they're not gonna talk to us, then we all just might refrain from pouring another flat white. Baristas are on strike all over the country, saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee. The CEO, he makes 6,000 times as much as a barista, and that itself's a crime, especially when you consider how impossible it is to survive on the service end of the coffee biz. So the baristas are on strike all over the country, saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee. You want people doing work, you gotta pay us so we can live another day to make another frappuccino. But with the rent as high as it's gotten to, there's no point in pouring another cold brew. Yeah, the baristas are on strike all over the country, saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee. Yes, are on strike all over the country, saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee.
The last song was our 2026 Labor Grammy winner, No Contract, No Coffee, performed by Isuno, and joining us now is David Rovics, who wrote and created the song. I caught up with Dave earlier this week on the road in California. So first of all, congratulations. Your song, No Contract, No Coffee, which we have played a lot on this show. We love it. It's a great song, and it's become somewhat of an anthem for the Starbucks strike. So congratulations.
I'm just incredibly excited to win this prestigious award, especially because, you know, as we're kind of alluding to in some of this conversation, the writing songs with AI music generation is very controversial for all kinds of reasons. But I really think that you can put it to great use if you want to, and it can be incredibly productive to produce, you know, songs like this that are good to sing on a picket line and sound good through loud sounds, you know, speakers, and cut through the noise of the traffic, because, you know, the production values of that stuff are really high. But I think it's a good song, and I love the you know, affirmation coming from you guys that somebody else thinks it's a good song. So it's just nice to get some kind of appreciation, because you're one of the few people who've heard this song, I think.
Well, I think they're hearing it at the grassroots, Dave, and you know, obviously we would love for it to be a global hit, but You know, even Woody Guthrie had to start somewhere, right?
That's right.
Yeah, the baristas are on strike. On strike. All over the country saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee. Yes, the baristas are on strike. On strike. All over the country saying no contract, no coffee, no contract, no coffee.
And so, but two of the people I wanted to work with Vrnab Amz afterwards.
That's
and
good.
It's always funny because I just speak from the top of, you know, from my heart about what I know about politics and stuff. And the issue was imperialism. So, but then the other two people are academics, you know, professors. And so they have a very academic, and they know about every nuance of Lenin and the fights between the second Congress, International Socialist Congress, and the blah, 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 you know, so, and I find that interesting. It's not really related to anything that would be of use right now, but, you know, it's fun to recall history, and so, that, but I always get a couple of students that want to do Vrnab Amz out of it.
Any
so.
Indication of anti-war stuff on campus happening?
Not yet, no. No one, I don't see any posters about that. I think that between Indivisible and social media dividing people up, and then also the terror against, the Palestinians that happened on campus, that really dampened things. The way campus is now, it's so controlled, you know, with AI and surveillance cameras and, just the electronic connection you have to just get in and out of dorms and things like that with your smartphone and stuff, all the stuff that goes on with that. So it's they're very intimidated, it seems like to me, to vocally protest. But the other thing is that a lot of people, I get the impression people have no idea this war is going on, you know, which is pretty interesting. And that can be concealed. But it's not made to be much of a thing, I guess, in mainstream media. And my friend who in prison, he called to say that the war ended. And in fact, when I was up there for a practical activism conference, one guy goes, "Oh, they just killed Khomeini, the war's over." And I was like, that does not sound like my understanding of events. And I mean, not, you know, sure, they killed Khomeini, but that was not the end of the war, because, you know, that's a mass, 5,000-year line of clerics and stuff like that. They're not just one guy's not going to get knocked out and end the country. So, I think that the misinformation in mainstream media is even more profound or similar. I guess basically the same as the COVID misinformation that was promoted, what's amazing is that then, because of social media, the Gaza horror was visible, but it wasn't visible in mainstream media, it was only visible online. But now they've got this whole thing kind of Yeah, I'm just kind of amazed. People believe all these really crazy CIA-invented MI6 Mossad stories, you know? And so, the 33,000 people killed, blah, 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 peaceful protesters, you know, which is total bullshit. Doesn't even make sense if you just think about it, on the surface of it.
You're talking about their claim that Iran police have killed 33,000 protesters in their own country. That's what you.
Yeah, the regime was so evil. When it turned out, it was Mossad and the CIA and MI6 that were sending in their own recruits and paying people and providing Starlink access and handing out automatic weapons and stuff. You know, so and that got crushed within 2 days, and so. Anyway, that was there's a lot of misinformation. So that might be one of the reasons their Indivisible isn't feeling pressured to protest the war, because it's not really all that visible.
Any events that you want to announce, Keith, that are coming up in the next week or so that people might not hear about otherwise?
I don't really know. I haven't organized any more protests right now.
You've done a lot of organizing.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the ball rolling, but it's hard. But, you know, main thing is, you know, now we're kind of bracing for, you know, for economic crises and the resulting increase in people eating with us, which I think will, like, there's a lot of crazy, I don't know if you saw, what's his name, Scott Bennis or whatever, the Secretary of Treasury, was interviewed on Sky News and got interrupted in the middle of it and to deal with Trump about something. And when he came back, he was shaking and visibly shocked by the whole thing, could barely talk. So some kind of, whether that was some war-related thing directly or if it was about his, you know, whatever, you know, or it was financial or something surrounding the, but they just, you know, stock market is really cratering, the housing market's cratering, the whole, the gas prices are going up. There's a, you know, so it's pretty clear that there's going to be a lot more unemployment, a lot more homelessness. Food prices are going to go dramatically, like a huge percentage of the chemicals required for fertilizer are not able to leave the you know, the Persian Gulf now. So it's already causing increased prices in fertilizer as much as 30%.
Ah, but our boys are going there to stage an amphibious operation, or to threaten to do so. Surely that will terrify the Iranian Republic into surrender, perhaps?
Oh, it's so funny, isn't it? Because, like, the many of the top leaders of Iran are like, oh, good, send them here. Because they know that they'll be slaughtered, and that would be... yeah, they'll just be slaughtered. And then that will even make the situation for the U.S. and Israel even worse. So it's tragic, but it does look like there's no way that the United States and Iran can get out of this in any kind of graceful way. They're kind of screwed. Iran is like demanding that an end to Israel, that the U.S. pay retribution for, you know, pay back all the money for the damage done to Iran, and that no U.S. troops or bases to be allowed in the Middle East anymore, that they all have to move. Then once that's firmly in place, then they will stop attacking. And they, you know, they spent decades preparing for this, and they already went through the 8-year war right after the revolution against the U.S. and Iraq, and so they're prepared, and of course the leadership of the United States is like a bunch of racist people with no brains, and so they assumed you can see evidence that the administration is like, wow, we thought we would just take them in 3 days. We'd kill Khomeini and the government would capitulate and all the people, we would put in our own guy. And they seem shocked at the disruption of the Strait of Hormuz. All the stuff that any normal person would have been able to predict and have predicted for a long time would happen. It did happen. The Iranians told you it was going to happen, and they kept their promise. And I think that's interesting. It's called True Promise 4 is the current war that's happening now. That's what Iran calls it. The U.S. calls it Operation Epic Fury. Which many people are making fun of. Like, I had a essay called Operation Epic Fuck-Up, because it is. It's an amazing fuck-up, man. You could see this a mile away, and I'm just like some guy on Social Security in freaking Santa Cruz, and, you know, and busy trying to keep Food Not Bombs and all these things going.
Any reports from other Food Not Bombses throughout the country or the world, if you want, that people might not have heard of because you don't read it in the Sentinel or the Chronicle, or it's even a little harder to get even on mainstream media or online. But anything happening that we should know about there?
Well, the saddest thing is that nine people associated with Food Not Bombs, some who may have volunteered on occasion, who are friends with the local Fort Worth and Dallas Food Not Bombs chapters, got convicted of terrorism. It was highlighted that what was interesting is that the prosecutor made a big point of that they were all dressed in black and trying to make it out because they're just anarchists and they're dressed in black, therefore they were terrorists and they're guilty, even though, and then the judge was very biased, and so it seems like it's ripe for a retrial, but it's a shame. And this is in the case where on 4th of July, a bunch of young people went and launched fireworks and spray-painted ICE vehicles at an ICE detention center, Prairieland ICE Detention Center. And somebody still yet to be identified fired a rifle at one of the security guards and hit him in the neck. And it appears from what I've been reading that was an informant, somebody not actually associated with the group that did the protest, but tagged along, and that way to make it into a more successful terrorism case and so on. And it's very similar, reminiscent to past cases of young anarchists and Food Not Bombs getting caught and similar things. Although on occasion, you know, they actually do things. You know, I think in the end, Bill Rogers, who got arrested and ended up committing suicide December 21st, or I forget the year. He did Food Not Bombs in Tucson, and he started Prescott Food Not Bombs, but he also was involved in burning a ski lodge in Aspen. And then a bunch of other people were tangentially, you know, who knew Bill, and I knew Bill. I was surprised I didn't get any problems. I did get questioned about it. I was taken off an airplane, questioned by the FBI, and what turned out to be in regards to this case. And when I landed in Chicago O'Hare on a flight from Istanbul to Heathrow, majority of the times, like the Eric McDavid case, where he got set up and he didn't do anything, but the informant tried to get him and Wren and Zachary to bomb a bank or blow up a dam or anything like that. And that was a woman by the name of Anna, whose real name I think I have in one of my Substacks, actually. You know, it turned out after Eric did 9 years in prison of a 19-year sentence, we were able to prove that that the entire case was an invention of the FBI and that there was no actual plot to do anything.
So is any of this stuff described in, you know, in any compact form at a place you'd recommend? Because we can't really go into it now, and your back is aching, and I got to finish up this show. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my suggestion is to go to, and I'll post some of this on the Food Not Bombs website under news.
Okay.
So that's foodnotbombs.net. And then the other thing is my Substack, Anarchist Cook, and or KeithMcHenry.substack. And that has all these different stories that I've been relating here with you.
All right. And they'll also be on the Huff website, at least those little parts of it that we have been made privy to.
Great, great. So there you have it. Well, this is pretty exciting. So buckle up. And the final word is that if electricity and phone service particularly goes down for any substantial amount of time, we have agreed that we'll meet at the town clock and then we'll in person figure out what to do during the event of such a crisis, like the cyber attack. That might be a good false flag to get us to join the war. As you know, they just they voted on this last year, but it just became real where If you're 18 to 28, you're automatically in the Selective Service. You don't need to go to the post office and fill out your little form anymore. And yeah, so all that's getting underway. The big war with all the dead bodies coming back, and the whole Vietnam War thing. It's got, you know, potentially, if the U.S. doesn't surrender and Israel doesn't surrender soon, and there's a possibility that the U.S. and Israel will have to surrender very in the near future. So maybe it won't be a quagmire, but it could easily be a Vietnam War type of thing. Certainly will be worse than Iraq or Afghanistan, that's for sure.
Hey, Keith, thank you for taking the time on the fly.
There you have it. Vote for me. I'm running for my life.
Indeed. And good luck with that.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Whoa!
January morning, Portland Avenue. Mother standing watch outside the school. 6 weeks of terror in our neighborhood. She blocked the street doing what she could. Whistles in the winter air, warning neighbors everywhere. A poet mother, three kids at home, protecting strangers on her own. Three shots fired, 700 milliseconds, steering wheel turn right. We've got the questions, they say she tried to kill, but we've seen the proof. Another soul lost beneath the truth. Not one more, not one more. Enough is enough, we won't be ignored. Not one more, not one more. This is our line, hear our voices roar.
Get the ice out!
Hey, hey!
They're freezing the dream in a bureaucrat shack. They call it order, we call it a raid. A flag in the wind, but the stars have decayed. They're banging on doors at 5 a.m. saying papers, please, like madmen condemn. But we ain't scared, we've got the clout. Raise your glass and chant ice out.
So, as Keith mentioned, there were numerous protests at three of them on the corner of Ocean and Water Streets over the last week or two. This is from March 9th, 2026. Some brief vignettes and conversations I had.
So, we have a lot of signs. Food Not Bombs has a big banner. No War with Iran. A Simple Peace sign from the Washington Peace Center. Dump Trump, power to the people, no more wars.
That's why I wrote the
Keith is talking to someone in the back of the Food Not Bombs placard. Let's listen in.
So that's always been that's why they were designed and started, and that's why they exist. So that's what's happening.
I'm just surprised that the measure failed.
Why don't you go around behind where you're not standing in front of the banner?
Good idea. Hey, Joseph, you have blank sign. Do you want to...
You got the words. I don't need the... You know, it's beyond words.
Yeah. All right.
It's a Zen sign.
It's Joe Schultz with a Zen sign, I must say. Very Zen, Joe.
Now I'm Zen.
Any thoughts today? You're here again. You were here last week.
I just have nothing to say or think.
But you are here.
I am here. What else can... I mean, it's the right place to be, but, I mean, we're all complicit. We're all complicit in this bullshit.
I didn't do it. I was at home.
I'm a good person. I drive an electric car. I'm honest.
Exactly. I was watching television when they did it.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Fuck. I'm really heart sick. I don't know, you know.
Well, that means you feel something, which is a mistake in this culture.
Yeah. I'm not feel sorry for the Israelis. I feel sorry for everybody. I mean, it's what, you know, there's only the number of people that are really, truly evil is not very big. You know?
Have you had any conversations in the last week that you particularly remember on this issue that came up that struck you for one reason or another?
No. No, I mean, it's, I mean, it's,
that's why they always have
no. Either everybody's, you know, totally agrees with me or totally doesn't believe anything I say. No, it's one way or the other.
Not much indifference?
Not much indifference. Actually, there's a lot of enthusiasm for, we have a very warlike people. Americans have been warlike.
In Santa Cruz, too.
Yeah, when it comes right down to it, I mean, we choose different wars. There's still wars, you know. I would like to think that we were on the side of the angels, but I don't.
Devils are more fun, Joseph.
Devils are more fun. They get all the lines, you know.
And they get all the perks as well.
Well, thank you for coming.
And thank you for talking, in spite of your blank sign.
Blankety blank.
Blankety blank, that's the best thing to be said. Thank you. So on the Starbucks building, there's several "No War on Iran" signs. I guess the business is closed, but the beat goes on. Anything you want to say for free radio?
I'm glad we have a relatively big group out here to speak against the war in Iran and the killing that the Trump administration seems to see as his mission in Venezuela. In
Greenland,
and too many other countries that don't
Canada.
Even make the news.
Canada,
you got it.
So, and were you here last week?
No, I was in San Francisco, so I didn't.
Were you at one of the protests there? How did they compare with these protests?
Well, San Francisco is a bigger city, but the energy here is pretty impressive. And the fact that so many people driving by are sounding their horns. And so far
out.
I've seen only one sign that wasn't affirmative. A down thumb. But everybody else has either had peace signs or honking or whatever. I mean, Santa Cruz is obviously not homogeneous, but this is a great place to do anti-war work.
Have you learned anything in the last week in conversations with people that you didn't know, particularly about how people feel about the war here?
I think people were surprised that just after the news came out that they were planning to negotiate with Iran, that they were in fact gearing up for bombing runs. Some people have been surprised at how effective the Iranian response has been. I wish they didn't have to respond in the way they did, but I mean, you know, countries have to respect their sovereignty and defend themselves. And the U.S. shouldn't be able to just walk in the way they did in Venezuela and walk out. So I don't know. There are more mixed views about our war with Iran because there's been such a long period of messaging about Iran, about the evils of the regime, and you know, some people still go back to 1979 when
they took our boys.
They took our boys. They reasserted their sovereignty. Yeah. So, anyway, it's good we're out here. There should be a lot more people, but, you know, people have lives that they have to live, and at least the people who are coming by are showing solidarity with our condemnation of the Trump administration's war.
Has this affected any of your relationships with people because of opposing views?
No. I mean, my family, who I'm mainly in touch with, they're all opposed to the war and opposed to the Trump administration more generally. I haven't had any conversations with neighbors that have suggested an opposite view, but maybe because people know where I stand on things, they don't open up the conversation. But I don't think there are very many people where I live who believe this war is justified, or believe any war is justified for that matter.
Because I know the Democrats generally have been favoring the arming of Ukraine against the Russian war. So there's been some concern with that in terms of those who are more anti-war in that.
Well, clearly the current situation is very complex, and people should in my view, should oppose any arming by the U.S. government of any country. And certainly we should stop funding Israel's genocide campaign against Palestinians. But, you know, if that's all Israel was doing, it would be horrible. But Israel has become, you know, an imperial power of its own.
Imperialist junior in the Middle East.
You got it. Nice way to frame it. Nice way to frame it.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say.
I'm sorry?
What's your name?
My name is Mark Ginsburg.
I'm Robert Norris, Mark.
Nice to meet you. And glad we're both out here.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for your talking.
Okay.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Excuse me?
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Can't keep track of all the Trump outrages, but I just keep to make sure it doesn't stop me from doing what I can.
Yeah. You are, in fact, a Quaker yourself.
I've been going to Quaker meeting all my life. Yeah.
And is there a consensus among Quakers on this issue, or is there different views?
I would think I can't speak for everybody, but I think it's a pretty much of a consensus. I don't officially represent the Quakers, but it's always been my home church through my life.
Mm-hmm. What about this person next to you? What does she think?
She's old and deaf. What's the question?
The question is, well, he's a Quaker.
I'm a Quaker.
And you're a Quaker.
Yes.
I was asking if there's a general consensus among Quakers on this issue here, war in Iran or no war in Iran, or is there a real difference between in viewpoints?
I think there's not much of a difference. We're just anti-war or for peace.
So you're not waiting for Armageddon to show up.
No.
You prefer it not show up at this
That's
point.
Right, exactly. Read this quote.
It says, remove.
Go ahead. Remove from thyself the occasion for war. Now that's the issue.
George Fox.
Yes, and what in me or you keeps this in place?
You in this case, but this guy too behind you.
Right, but I think we have to just ruthlessly get rid of all our crap. That's the solution.
That probably wouldn't be a bad idea if I could ever get myself to do it.
Of course, that's the...
What's your name?
Elizabeth.
Robert Elizabeth.
Oh, Robert. I have lots of Roberts in my family.
And I've heard of an Elizabeth before, but you're here now. That's what counts.
Well, thank you for hanging out and talking with everyone.
Anyone who wants to talk. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. No, sit down, relax. I'm just
okay.
I'm wandering around harassing people here.
Always good to see you.
So, you're here, you were taking, haven't you? Have a seat.
Okay.
Thank you.
I played 3 hours of music yesterday. Keith was there and some people from Food Not Bombs. I'm 70 now, and I'll tell you, it's getting harder and harder. You know, you play, you have to set up, tear down, wrap everything up. And you come out, my legs are really tired.
Have a seat.
You know?
Have a seat. Really, I'm good. I would tell you if I need to sit down.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm, you know.
You want to ask a couple questions?
Yeah, I was thinking of that. You're a musician yourself?
Yeah. So, all my life I've been mixing activism, peace, music, and consciousness is all kind of part and parcel woven together. because people enjoy music, and it's a great way to use that as a communication method to talk about peace, to talk about how we can have a higher ideal and expression, and that we can do this together. Yeah.
What's the group you're with?
The 77 Wonders.
And are you a paid group? Are you a political group, or are you a little of both? Or?
We're a little bit of everything. We play for free all the time. We play for tips just to take care of small expenses. We're not really in it as a money-oriented band. At our age, you're happy to be playing, happy to be giving, happy to be standing there still doing it would be a big part.
How many are you in this group?
Well, generally four. And it's pop music. It's, you know, John Lennon was a very big influence when I was young, and the idea of combining the message was really important. Yesterday we were only two, but generally we were a four-piece.
So where did you play yesterday? Because I know there was a group here last Monday.
Yeah. We played at the Over the Hill Gang Saloon over there on Portola. Uh-huh. And so people come out and enjoy the music, and then they have Mexican food you can buy next door, and they eat on crate barrels and everything, and a nice little awning over there, and about, you know, 45, 50 people that generally sit and enjoy the music. And, you know, there's a forward movement to make a statement for people for peace, but there's also a little bit of reprieve. Don't let them rob you of your joy. Don't let them rob you of your sense of enjoyment. That's why they come out and they enjoy the music. We can have them be on message and also have a little reprieve at the same time.
Have you encountered many folks of, shall we say, opposing views?
Not many. Not many. Most people that... a lot of people really don't know anything about domestic policy. A lot of people aren't very well read. We find that more than anything. In fact, if you wanted to play a trivia game, you could ask somebody who's in second and who's third in command in the United States. Do you know a lot of people couldn't answer J.D. Vance or couldn't answer Marco Rubio? They really don't know quite what's going on here. I mean, there's no sense in going on about international policy at that point.
Marian Edelson?
Don't hear too much. Most people are against Trump. They come to our thing anyway. And it's just because this is largely also a Democratic state. This is a blue state, so it's a little easier. You know, we warned them. You know, we gave them Kennedy and they said no. We gave them Bernie and they said no. So.
Well, it was Hillary who said no to Bernie, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's true too. Yep.
But she then got, everybody went, and then Bernie turned right around and voted for Hillary as well. I mean,
yeah, isn't that interesting how they go through a process of elimination and then they eliminate each other, and finally the last person standing is the person they get behind anyway. The very person that defeated him. I don't know how that's unbelievable.
It's power. Everyone wants power and thinks they can manipulate it to their own ends, and
yeah.
I don't know if they can.
That's true. I'm always out here supporting the homeless. Because there's an old saying that says, if God couldn't come today and God sent you, what difference did you and God make? And that's not necessarily a religious thing. That's just acting as though you are representing a divine aspect. And you should be here by appointment. You should stand up for what you think is right. You shouldn't allow them to run you over.
Have your views changed at all in your life on these issues? And if so, at what point did that happen?
You know, it's constantly been in motion. Most of my basic views have always stood in place. No preemptive strikes. No initial bombing run campaigns. Find a way to keep the communication open, even though their culture may be extremely different from our culture, find a way. Because that's really all you have. War is the last result, and it's the most ignorant result. Doesn't have to be that way. But yet, we still go through the same machinations, don't we? Unbelievable.
Well, the people who declare the wars aren't usually the ones who fight them, you know.
People for peace.
Oh, there you are.
People for peace and food dot bombs.
This was the Sinai song. Yeah.
Right.
What's that?
I think you were answering the question of when you were, when if ever you changed your views, and you said pretty much, you pretty much had the same ones.
Most of the basics are always there in place. You know, administrations and regimes are going to change. What stays as a constant is to convince them that war isn't a way, poverty can be dealt with, homelessness can be supported and dealt with, people that need medical aid can be supported. Some things have changed. I probably, when I was younger, had more of a liberal view of maybe, I remember we used to take the sugar cubes for, what was it, smallpox or something. Today, I'm not completely an anti-vaxxer, but I'm definitely not on board with any vaccinations for the most part. Aside from the fact that I had to have a cortisone shot because I was in so much pain. But I was very much against the COVID shot and the mRNA rollout program. I saw that, and it proved to be true, as the great redistribution of wealth is what happened. They say, in the old days, they would say, I remember when they had this saying, well, you've got to follow the science. Well, we did, and it led me, I met Dr. Robert Malone himself in San Jose at his lecture, who turned against the mRNA. And he says, I believe we have made a grave error here. And his research and his delivery and his lecture was extremely compelling.
Was he ever in favor of the...
Well, he was one of the architects of the mRNA. He was actually one of the architects. He was on the short list of the White House when the pandemic first broke out. They called Dr. Christine Parks. They called Dr. Ryan Cole, Dr. Robert Malone. Of course, they called Tony Fauci, the terrible man. They called him in. And they called in Dr. Peter McCullough. And the short list was pared down to Anthony Fauci. And the programming was always the same. Take this, you know, problem, reaction, solution. It's the same model that's always been used in every rollout program or every war. And what do we find? The same result. Wasn't what we thought. And the various reports were showing that a lot of people were getting ill. You know, so I would highly recommend, you know, don't fall into the trap.
And we have been talking with
Robert Perella.
Thank you, Robert.
I'd like to commend anybody's creative efforts who's trying to put them to use in any capacity. And I would encourage people to write songs and to play with music in whatever way they want to, whether it's with an instrument or with AI music generation. But whether you're using an AI music generation platform or using a guitar or a piano or whatever it is you're doing to write a song, the craft of songwriting either shines through in the song or it doesn't. I've long found that if you want to actually move people emotionally, you cannot tell them what you think. And you cannot just say, you know, screw this or that or whatever. You can't just tell us your opinion or get us to chant together. That doesn't really move people. Chants don't particularly move people. What moves people, not just recently, but like since humans have been around, as far as I know, what moves people are good stories. And if you tell a story well and it really takes people away, and it really can transform them and really teach them things that they didn't know and make them feel and think about things that they hadn't felt or thought about before. But as soon as you tell them what you think they should think, then you're robbing your listeners or your audience of the ability to think or feel about this subject themselves. And experienced artists of any kind know that. And so they know that you need to tell a story, and that's what you need to do, and you need to do that well, and then get out of the way. But when people get in the way of their own attempt to tell a story, which is what some of those songs were starting to do in the first verse, you know, then they kind of kill the song at that point as soon as they start telling us what they think. That's something I figured out a long time ago. It took a while to figure that out, though. I wrote a lot of bad songs telling people what to think before I started writing any good songs that just told stories.
Bye, Bovino. No one will miss you go. Bye, Bovino. Mini Gestapo. F off, ice hole, it's time you went away. Tiny Bovino, commander of going away. Your goons killed and you lied. A court will see you someday. You're the mini in Minneapolis, a fake cop in every way. Go sniff some lady shoes. Bye, Bovino. Trump should let you loose. Woo! We will try you soon.
You little Nazi goon.
Bye, Bovino. You can F off today. Bye, Bovino. Your fault. Ice won't get paid. Great not seeing you in Nazi trench coats in parking lots, grabbing innocent throats. Your old lesbian hairdo. You're gone. Soon you're through. We love to see you go. You're garbage and you know. Bye, Bovino. Ice as small as sky. Bye, Bovino. You microscopic fly. Go F yourself, short guy.
Now you are crushed ice.
Oh! I've had more dangerous encounters at gas station counters in the Walmart parking lot. But the smaller the man, the quicker the plan goes to somebody's getting shot. Kevlar and jeans, a mask and a gun and a badge for everyone in the mob. You probably don't need to shoot someone in the face to do the thing that you're calling a job. How's work? Well, they got a shooting women now. How's the pay? Well, there's a bonus if you're wanting in. How's the hours? We shoot them in the daylight. And then we steal them away in the dark of the night. Only the best and the brightest, only the finest get to put on the sacred mask. If you ever been fired, congrats, you're hired for this particular task. Now they'll circle the wagons, drape the man in a flag, and say don't trust what your eyes can see. They'll say it's her fault instead for getting shot in the head when we all watch the same damn thing.
And that was two more about the Gestapo-style raids in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I guess it was, the first was about Bovino, who was leading the expedition there. And the other one was by Jesse Wells. Well, back to the protests in our town. No Gestapo, but perhaps if the protests grew, the Gestapo would emerge. Better an emerging Gestapo than no protests about this crazy, insane war in Iran.
Oh my gosh!
Anything you two want to say about the war for free radio?
Not today. Sorry, I'm not sure what I.
Yeah, that's okay.
No apologies are necessary.
Hey, how you doing?
A little achy. How about you?
I'm okay, surviving.
You got the right chair there. I think it's a good idea. Any thoughts on the war you want to talk about or anything else in Santa Cruz that's relevant?
Okay, it was the United States and Israel. It was a war of choice. It never should have happened. And Donald Trump is going to find out the hard way that he never should have started this in the first place. And we're being lied to about a lot of things, about all the casualties. I find it hard to believe that 6 or 7 soldiers got killed. A lot more. If you go to the independent news medias, like in Germany, they'll tell you what's really going on.
Now, do you have to speak German to do that, or do you have a recommendation?
You can get an English translation. I don't really have an a ready answer. But I do think that we need to end this war. We need to end it now. It's not going to... And Trump is actually suggesting this morning via Midas Touch that we start up the draft.
And that there might be some boots on the ground.
What?
Boots on the ground.
Yeah, I know. I hope not. But that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Sure. And we've been talking with, if you want to say.
Say that again.
You are...
I'm Robert.
I'm Bill. And you are?
Robert.
Nice to meet you, Robert.
Nice to meet you, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you, man. So it's now about 5:15, and we have about 30 people who are with signs. Don't excuse the inexcusable is one sign. Resist war is another. Stop the war in Iran. Humanity matters is another sign.
Dangerous for those people.
Yeah,
because I mean,
you know,
the Israelis.
We're going to be listening in on this conversation here.
But particularly the Palestinians that are getting the videos from.
Mind if I record this?
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty hardcore, you know. They're doing that. So, yeah, what a trip, man. But the videos that are coming out of the devastation of, and then George Galloway has a bunch of friends in you know, Israel and Tel Aviv, and he said, he was like, man, my friends are calling and texting me stuff, and it looks like Gaza now in a lot of parts of Tel Aviv.
But the Ben Gurion one was fake, and I saw that footage.
That video was fake, but the strike was real. That's what's really frustrating. So
there's a real thing, but there's an AI picture.
Yeah, they use AI video, and then I got a bunch of people gave me crap. Why are you posting AI? And I looked and looked, and I read all about how this really got hit, and I just didn't look that much like AI. But then in the end, it was.
That's what the media does too. They always use different pictures for the pic. You know, they'll just have some related picture.
Yeah.
It's not always like the real. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. So for instance, the I think this one was Hezbollah took out. Attacked Ben Gurion Airport, which is the main commercial airport in Tel Aviv, and there was an AI. There was a video of bombs hitting the runway, and panicked people in the
into the shelters.
Yeah, in the shelters, running down to the shelters, and it turned out it was AI. Yeah. Artificial intelligence. It wasn't a real video,
but it depicted a real event that happened.
It was about a real event that happened, but it was a phony video of the real event that happened.
So you were spreading treasonous lies. Is that what you're
saying? So then my don't die for Israel. Join conscientious object. You know, be a conscientious objector meme. And I have the first four people that were killed as the image. U.S. troops that were killed, and. Now, even people are like stealing the top of my thing and putting in other pictures underneath it. It's really cool, so it's spreading like crazy. And then the GI Rights Hotline said they're overwhelmed with calls. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I thought you weren't going to say anything.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, and then the other thing that's leaking out is that the reporters in Germany are noting that they've had to get rid of close the maternity wards and all these sections of the two U.S. military hospitals in Germany where they're flying the bodies and the injured into, and they're doing massive blood campaigns to get blood for the U.S. troops that are coming in injured. So it's not seven people, it's a thousand at this point.
Maybe they're just all wounded, Keith. Yeah. Did you ever think of that, perhaps?
So that's really interesting.
It's crazy how we're supposed to believe, there's 5,000 bombs and only 2 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how could anybody push a button?
Yeah, I mean, and then when you start looking at the individual reports, like, you know, there was a Reuters reported that, you know, 41 U.S. sailors died in a torpedo strike on a U.S. Navy ship. And
that wasn't true?
It's true, but that didn't get... There's a lot of, you know, then six CIA died in another, in a hotel when a drone hit them and killed them. And so it's a lot more people... A lot more people are dying than the U.S. troops are dying than what they're saying. And they apparently have captured U.S. troops, 174.
Where were those guys supposedly at? I never quite got...
Well, I think some of the troops were, like, coming in with the Kurds from that direction, and they got captured. And then there was, I think, there, one story might be that they were attempting to land on the island where the... major oil refinery is, and in the got captured there, but it's not clear. And then there's all these AI photos of the captured prisoners
that are definitely fake.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, and it's a way that they're getting trying to. Then Tanny Lowe accused me of, like, all Keith does is post these AI propaganda.
Yeah, you guys swarmed so hard yesterday. There was like 50 people like trolling me or something.
Yeah, I get, like, really harassed.
You must have really pissed them off.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because they're like, well, that's propaganda. And I said, well, no, it'd be good if Ben-Gurion got hit. I don't see what's wrong with that. I've landed in Ben-Gurion. They were fucking people were assholes. So, yeah, it's amazing. But it's pretty clear that... And then what they did, some manipulation to drive the, I guess they announced that they're going to empty all the strategic reserves of the G7 of oil, and then the oil plummeted by the barrel instantly. It dropped like to half what it was, or I guess it went down to 80-some dollars a barrel from 119 a barrel. And they're just manipulating everything. It's incredible. It's like totally out of control. And yeah, they did the same thing with gold and silver the day before. And
a lot of people are making a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the thing that people are by taking out the oil refinery in Iran in the Strait of Hormuz. That opened up another whole front, so now Iran has the right to take out all the oil refineries that Israel hasn't already taken out. And I guess they took out a bunch of oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. So, yeah, trying to get real news is not easy.
Yeah, there's always, like, nothing. Like, even the mainstream just hardly will say anything, but whatever they say is bullshit.
Yeah, it's all total lies, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Keith.
The Iranians are lying too.
Would it be an open zone?
So we have one man on the median, which is, of course, well, there are actually some others in the small medians of Ocean and Water Street that are not in the center between the two lanes, but sort of where you walk out to go either way. Hey, Pat.
Hey there, Robert.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
I would like to. I would like people to look at the Ron Unz website. That's very simple. UNZ.com. You'll see a wide variety of political opinions. Inevitably, you'll disagree with some of them because it is a wide variety. Ron Unz himself is incredibly well spoken. I highly recommend him. I get accused of being anti-Semitic. Ron Unz is Jewish.
I have never accused you of being anti-Semitic.
Not you. I didn't mean you. But just standing here, I get it. And Ron Unz is Jewish. I write his name in for president. Okay?
And the name of the person again is?
Ron Unz. Website. Website. Very simple. UNZ.com. And from there, you can go to a lot of other sources, many of them Jewish, like Max Blumenthal, Glenn Greenwald,
Aaron Mate,
What?
Aaron Mate.
Yeah. I'll be glad to talk to you at a greater length some other time.
Sure.
Thank you, Pat. We've been talking with?
I'm Pat. Pat Kittle.
The notorious Pat Kittle.
Notorious. Okay. I'll accept that.
Thank you, Pat.
Good seeing you.
All right.
And we have no war.
How you doing?
I remember him. I'm all right.
Don't stand in the street. I'll back up just because some cars are going really fast around this corner.
Then I can always hire a good lawyer, right?
Yeah.
So anything you want to say for free radio?
But the lawyer is going to make more money.
Much more money, that's right.
The lawyer is going to make much more money if you aren't standing in the street. You're not standing.
Why should I want the lawyer to make? Well, that's another story, I guess.
The lawyer takes a percentage of what they get for you. So the more they can get for you, the more they make. And so
usually they get huge amounts, and the other people get less. I've noticed, which is unfortunate. I suppose they say they do the work, but it's never persuaded me particularly. I don't like the way the system works, particularly.
None of us like the way the system works.
Well, some probably do.
Do you have a radio show, or are you recording?
No, I'm recording for a net radio show.
Radio Free Santa Cruz still
free
exists?
Radio, it does, of a sort. There are two or three of us who are still doing programs. We don't have a studio. It's mostly a handful, so... But on the other hand, if you decide to become a broadcaster, we'd have more. So you're invited.
But if I like attorneys, can I be on your radio station?
You can. On my program, anybody can. But on the old free radio, of course, there was a general feeling that you have to have somewhat leftward slant or else... They didn't want Klansmen on the air, that sort of thing. I've had people who are Nazis on my show who are also being harassed by police for other reasons for going after homeless people. So,
Alan, we were talking about you a minute ago. What were we saying about?
What were you saying about him? Were you attacking this man?
Yeah, I was talking about this man. What was I saying? I was just talking to Jack a minute ago.
Well,
I didn't hear it. Whatever.
We could start with we went up to the peace demonstration in San Francisco on Saturday.
I was pretty disappointed because I thought the crowd was only 600 or 800 people, and I thought a demonstration, wartime demonstration in San Francisco, should have more people.
Big time. I agree. And this is disappointing to me that you have 25 people now, whereas you had 200 a week ago. Things have not gotten better; they've gotten worse. So this, you know.
Yeah, my opinion is that I'm never very optimistic about the Middle East. I think that as far as Israel is concerned, they would like the whole country of Iran to look like Gaza looks like.
And they're working on
Gaza is a... How many years did it take them to totally destroy Gaza? They couldn't do it in 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 1 year.
They had to work hard.
Yeah, to destroy the country of Iran.
With U.S. tax dollars.
Well, and U.S. advanced weaponry.
Yeah. I think one of the uplifting things to me is both of us being children of Holocaust survivors, right? Holocaust family. And was... being able to share with a number of the Persians and Palestinians how much we are in solidarity with them and how much we've been censored in the media, like it's as if we didn't exist, and how important that is to create those links even though we're being blacked out in the mainstream.
Now, how do you think this compares with 2003 when you and I were both busted at the... What
Capitola Recruitment Center. Yeah, protesting the Iraq invasion. But I was also having memories of being on Market Street, 23 years ago, before they started the invasion of Iraq, and the second one, the big one. and how there were almost 250,000 people there, and now it's like we have only a few hundred. And that was before the war even started. There were that many.
You're thinking of the big protest in Santa Cruz,
San Francisco.
I know here in San Francisco they had 6,000 people right before the war, but the day after there were none.
Right, because people feel powerless, and we're being convinced that we're powerless, and that's why I keep telling people, really, you know, they don't give a crap about us and what we say, as long as they can keep, you know, collecting the money and all the power. And so I think the only thing that's going to be really effective is mass tax resistance. And we had a thing called the Pledge of Resistance in the 80s that I forget how many, but if so many people would agree to get arrested if they invaded Nicaragua altogether, we'd all do it.
And that stopped the invasion, you think?
I think that helped prevent the invasion, went along with other things. And I think if enough people, a million...
Are we only going to 5:30?
A million people all agreed to refuse their taxes and put it towards, instead towards local helping each other, social concerns, we could start to put a wrench in the gears of the, you know, the war machine.
Yeah. Well, it worked before. You've had some experience with it. Have you started trying such a thing, or do you feel you need a core of organizers to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, my life, unfortunately, is a lot about survival, and I've gotten targeted, like a lot of us have, for being an organizer and ostracized for talking about fascism. Now I think that's passé, that people, a lot of aware people see that it is fascism. But before, I would get ostracized, and was too extreme to talk about that. But I said, you know, as a child of a Holocaust survivor, it seems obvious where this country's been going.
Well, I know that I'm surprised that there's so few people here compared with just a week ago, as I was saying a moment ago to these folks. But is that because the Democrats primarily are trying to play both sides of the road here again? Is that what they're doing?
Well, there is, that is, I say don't vote Republican, but anyway. But I don't think it's one thing or other. I think things go in waves and people are overwhelmed. I've been exhausted and overwhelmed. And I think that, I think what's really going to hit people, and that finally a lot of people are going to be more motivated, is when suddenly gas is up at $20 a gallon and the world economy is collapsing. I mean, look, they did the unthinkable and the most idiotic thing. Bomb Iran's oil fields. Like, Iran was not going to bomb oil fields. And now they're like, well, we know they're taking out the Israeli refineries, but they could take out all of the Gulf States refineries if they keep destroying Iran, and that's 25% of the world's oil. India, all these countries are going to be really suffering and struggling, and they're not going to be as inclined to be subservient to the, you know, fascist cabal that's running this country.
Counterproductive. You could be an advisor to the Fuhrer.
Yeah. I'm just a little too furious for that.
He would appreciate your thoughts, for a time, anyway.
Well, I think that they monitor all of us. You know, we're all, we have our, you know, our phones, which is our personal monitoring devices, and we're...
AI will do the trick.
Yeah, and they've got it all in computers, so that's why they can do it moment to moment, and... you know, we can't really get ahead of that time-wise, but we can just keep being, you know, trying to build community.
And we've been talking with?
Alan Fischer, A-L-A-N-F-I-S-C-H-E-R.
One of the many.
Yes, there's two of us. We met on May 1st, two Alan Fishers. We spell it slightly differently, but we're both children of Holocaust survivors, and we met at the beginning of the student occupation, May 1st, 2024. Up at UCS.
In the days when there was a student occupation. I remember them well.
Yeah, well, repression. I was hoping the students could find a way to be a little more prepared for the repression that came down, but that does, you know, really vicious repression will fragment.
But it is also true that the Stanford folks are being,
you know, the DA is facing hung juries. So that's encouraging.
That's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, they're going after the DA, claiming his attempt to retry again and then use his campaign to gather money, get money for his own reelection, should rule him out for this particular prosecution. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alan.
Yeah, thank you.
Any concluding statement?
Well, I just think all those things that are a little cliche, but, you know, Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, seeing nothing, no matter how insignificant what you do seems, it's important that you keep doing it. And, you know, it's all about community. They're going to try to censor us and black the news out, but we just have to keep doing what we're doing, and eventually people will realize that we are a majority.
Or we'll die, and somebody else will do it.
Yes.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
And as for you, any final comments?
I'm good. Maybe I said already, Netanyahu is not going to be happy until Iran is completely destroyed. Completely. Completely, completely.
You just don't like Netanyahu, do you?
No, I don't. He's been around for a while.
I call him Nazi-like Netanyahu. And I feel those of us who are come from the history of the Holocaust, we definitely, I mean, we're all entitled to speak the truth, but I think we especially have a place in making that really clear. It's not rhetoric, it's the facts, it's the reality.
I will be contacting Mossad, and we'll be talking to you later.
Yeah, that's right.
Or we'll put it on your cell phone. How's that? We've been talking with
Shalom, Dream, Peace, Compost.
The infamous Shalom, who's been around for God knows how long. Take care. Comments for free radio?
Pardon?
Comments for free radio?
Impeach the motherfucker.
Thank you.
We sang for a name on a January day. Shot down in Minneapolis, federal agents wouldn't say. Why a woman in her Honda had to die that way. We lit our candles, raised our voices to the winter air. Said not one more, Lord, not one more. Sound. You save lives in the ICU, knew how to heal. Now it's gone and they won't let us see what's real. Phone in one hand, filming what was going down. Reached out to help a woman they'd shoved to the ground. Pepper sprayed her, flew into the street. Shot him while he was pinned beneath their feet. Not one more, we said not one more. But here we stand, counting again. How many names we gonna add before?
So for more of those songs by David Rovix and details about who sang them and who wrote them and, well,
lots of more information about the war in the Middle East from the perspective of David Rovics. Check out him on his website at David Rovics, that's R-O-V-I-C-S. But comes now the flashback. Here we're going to zip back to December 18th, 2008. And briefly, you'll hear attorney David Beauvais, I call him Bedrock Beauvais, an attorney describing the case of Joseph Ciampi of Palo Alto, a guy who lived in his vehicle, who was being harassed for living in his vehicle, and who fought City Hall and won, or at least at that point he had won. In any case, according to the San Jose Mercury News of January 18th, 2011, 3 years later, Palo Alto police Tuesday showed videos of a scuffle between three cops and a man they stunned with a taser almost 3 years ago. Videos that go to the heart of a lawsuit against the city. Joseph Tony Ciampi sued Palo Alto in June 2009 in federal court, accusing the city of violating his civil rights during the March 15, 2008 confrontation. A judge has ordered the city and Ciampi, who is representing himself in court, to meet with a mediator. Before Ciampi sued, a Santa Clara County judge determined in December 2008 that Palo Alto police had illegally provoked him into the confrontation and dismissed a felony charge against him for resisting an officer in the line of duty. In response to a local newspaper request, police and city attorney's office Tuesday showed the media separate video footage taken from cameras in patrol vehicles and on the tasers of officers Manuel Temores and Kelly Berger, who were involved in the fight. Temores approached Ciampi's van because a neighbor had complained that he appeared to be living inside it. Officers Berger and April Wagner arrived shortly after Temores. The Santa Clara County judge later determined the police officers acted outside the law when they forced Ciampi out of the van by pretending to call a tow truck. "Give me the expletive ordinance," the video shows Ciampi telling officers as they tried to order him out of the van. Wagner tells him the officers just want to talk to him, but Ciampi contends they showed up to harass him. Wagner then says he violated a municipal code, which turned out to be wrong. The footage and audio shows the dispute intensifying as officers yell at Ciampi, ordering him to show his hands and commanding him out of the van. One of the officers threatens to taser him if he doesn't get out, and Berger and Ciampi exchange profanities throughout the dispute. When Ciampi does get out of the vehicle, the officers appear to lunge toward him as he moves to pick up a bottle on the street near the van, but he emerges unarmed. The video shows the three officers attempting to arrest Ciampi while pushing him toward a fence, and Berger appearing to fire a taser as Ciampi turns toward him in an effort to strike his hand. Whether Berger was struck before he fired the taser remains in dispute, since it's not explicitly clear in the video footage. After the taser is deployed, Ciampi wildly flails his arms and strikes the three officers. Temores fires his taser to help subdue Ciampi. Ciampi has alleged that authorities secretly edited the videos, which Palo Alto City Attorney Don Larkin said have become significant evidence in the lawsuit. That's a story from the San Jose Mercury News entitled "Palo Alto Police City Attorney Reveal Footage of 2008 Taser Incident by Jesse Dungan" of the San Jose Mercury News, January 18, 2011. I don't know if that clears matters up much at all. I wish we could contact the attorney who covered the case, David Beauvais. I mentioned him before. But he can be hard to reach at different times. But if I hear more, and if I follow this case at all, I may bring it up again and mention it. You can always give me a call at 423-4833 if you have any additional information. And here's a final song from the Parody Project, which I haven't played much from because they often kind of pack with Democratic Party politics, which, though Democrats can be right on some issues, it usually varies when they get into power. And they have not, they've been rather wrong about issues of silence with Biden's support of the Israeli genocide and the Democratic Party's general support of the oligarchs who are, frankly, ruining the country. Anyway, this song is called When Johnny Comes Rolling Home. It's by Don Carone and Freedom Toast, also known as the Parody Project, I guess.
When Johnny comes rolling home again, Iran, Iran, we know he'll never roam again. Iran, Iran, his legs don't work and his shoulder droops, but that's okay, we support the troops. We will all think twice when Johnny comes rolling home. When our boy comes back broken, Ben, Iran, Iran, we'll wonder why he ever went. Iran, Iran, McConnell gets all his contracts done, and a coward claims he's the favorite son, but we'll all think twice when Johnny comes rolling home.
The White House thinks they'll do the job.
Iran, Iran,
they'll never hear our Johnny sob.
Iran, Iran, they have no idea who attacked our boats. It's buried in John Bolton's notes. Trump will not be there when Johnny comes rolling home.
Again they tell us there's a threat.
Iran, Iran,
how gullible do we have to get?
Iran, Iran, they tell us that we must strike back to avenge a fictitious non-attack. It will be for naught when Johnny comes rolling home. We wait for Johnny to arrive. Iran, Iran, he will be more dead than alive. Iran, Iran, he joined to fight for the USA. Can't understand, he'll get tossed away. But we'll all wake up when Johnny comes rolling.